there, and so the off-ramps, that's part of the reason why there's 11, is that there's really two questions that are being addressed there. Could restructure it so you have one set of criteria for one and another set of criteria for the other. Would maybe help people understand the rationale a little better.
I think that the way they're written now conveys, and I think this was our intent, was we didn't want to have to do a whole bunch of level two reviews. We wanted to do the level two reviews where they really were important to be done. And how do we do that? And that's the way it came down.
Because
you're so nice. I was looking at Don.
Well, I'd like to follow up on something you were saying, Dave, about the intent of alternatives too. I mean, just so people are clear on what kind of my position is, I too see this as the heart of the anti-degradation procedure. Nothing in the federal program was designed to just say outside of your tier one waters. No discharge. What it says is, let's not discharge pollutants at levels we don't need to. Let's not degrade water where we don't need to. And it's set up, I think, a very logical way to look at that. It said, first, let's make sure it's necessary to do the discharge. It's looking at alternatives. And then it said, secondly, let's make sure that it's really an important economic and social need that we're addressing by allowing this degradation. Because as a community, we're losing something if we're degrading our water quality. So we should get something in return. You get some important social gain, which I think is number four on your list. So just so people know, I mean, to me, this alternative is the heart of it. It's not about stopping a particular discharge. What it's about is making sure that as a community or a society, however you want to look at it, we're looking at these things in a rational way. It's not about paperwork. I mean, I think, didn't you say Mayfield, they wrote a 6-page letter, and they said, we looked at these things, they're not feasible for us, and you guys decided that that was acceptable. It's not a level two review is not death. You know, we don't have to spend all our energy avoiding one. It's just a rational approach to looking at these decisions.
Yeah, and I mean, to be fair, I mean, I think when Utah went about developing the rule, there was some apprehension about the workload. Mm. Is that fair?
That's fair.
And they wanted to start small and put something in place that it could be built upon. I mean, you were envisioning that this rule would stay the same forever, right?
Since it worked so well, yes.
you wanted to adopt something that EPA would approve, with the idea that then you would get some experience with it.
Yeah, and here's our first experience with level two.
Lessons learned.
And here's our experience with the new group. So, yeah, it's all part of it.
So it's all good.
Yeah. No, but, you know, if you look at a lot of different, I've got a bunch of different states here that I've looked through. And there's going to be, when you talk about the percent issue, there's some who say it's a percent, just like Utah's. Each time they review it, there are some who I assume are drawing a baseline at some point in time, and they say it's a percent of that baseline that will allow it to go up to. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's looking at me like that. I'm an idiot.
Colorado does that.
What?
Colorado does that, but very few states do that.
And I think Oregon does too.
Okay.
And then you go back into the next issue is, even if you do a level two review, what constitutes important social and economic benefit? I mean, if you go, Colorado's got, I mean, not Colorado, but I don't remember on Colorado, but Oregon's got like 90 pages. And they actually have a definitive economic benefit, cost-benefit analysis to talk about whether it's going to be for a business, it's going to be. And in a residential, it's going to be tied to the national EPA's goal of 1.4% as a median household income as the affordability index. So you've got all sorts of things that are going to be possibly applying here. If you go into the definition, the question is, are we trying to write a rule that includes all of that, i.e. the Oregon approach, or are we trying to write a rule that is generally providing that kind of potential for review? And it seems to me that our current rule provides that potential for review. The only question is, are we trying to move to a much more complex analysis in the rule? I mean, as you said, I could treat to any level. It's just a matter of how much you want to pay for it. California is going through, they've had communities who have revolted in terms of the rate increases that have been proposed because they're starting to look at actually wastewater treatment using reverse osmosis for salinity. And so they're looking at communities where they're talking about $100 a month increase to their sewer rates. So there is a question as to where that threshold is for what you're going to accept. And I don't know if we're going to try and address that here. Are we?
Well, we, in our talk, you talked about the 1.4. I believe that we have in our rule for non-water, for non-municipal facilities where it says that alternatives, this is in the middle on page 3, kind of down, maybe two-thirds of the way down. An option more costly than the cheapest alternative may have to be implemented if, excuse me, if a substantial benefit to the stream can be realized. Alternatives would generally be considered feasible where the costs are no more than 20% higher than the cost of the discharging alternative, or for the POD-PW's 1.4. So that's kind of already in our rule. We've set a cap on the cost. But then the whole question is, what's the discharging alternative, and what does that include?
Well, you can meet any goal you want.
That's right.
It's just a matter of how much money, how much time, and how much energy you want to expend to meet it.
Let me throw it out. Let me throw this out for discussion. Let's assume that we are the regulatory authority. Let's assume we're all DWQ. And the question has come before us on whether we're going to require Mayfield to do a level 2 review. And we're not using this mathematical spreadsheet with all of the numbers that we have, like the 20% loading and all that. We're just doing it as a narrative, if you will. Or we're trying to determine what our new policy would be. What would we say? We'd ask ourselves, well, it's going from 270 to 535. So that's a fact. That's chemistry balancing. That's no big deal. Then the question is how important that is to us to have them do a level 2 review? What would we say?
Well, that's 270 to 536 on the maximum discharge on the days that it's at the lowest flow, the 7Q10.
That's so the most critical period of time.
There is this narrowing of the window as to how much, how often that will occur. What is it, one every 5 years?
It's based on 10.
Yeah, but
a 7-day period over 10 years, which is your question, Paul. It's a 7-day running average over the last 10 years. If we have a USGS station to gather the information, if not, we take the 20th percentile of all the flow that we have available at the closest location. That's our critical flow.
So what's your question, Bill? Are you saying how much information do we need to have as a group to know whether to do it?
I guess I'm asking this. We're trying to set a new policy, if you will, for anti-degradation level 1. What should it be?
Limit, yeah.
Would part of our policy say we're going to exclude Mayfield from doing a level 2? And if so, what would be the criteria that we would use to exclude them?
Why would you exclude Mayfield and not exclude Jordan Valley?
Why would we exclude them?
That would be my first question. Does Jordan Valley want to do the same thing with their discharge water out of Kennecott? Why are they not allowed, but Mayfield's going to be allowed to?
That's the question. If we don't have rules, we have rules in place right now we can play with. The 20% loading, and we went through what they were on that spreadsheet. What if we didn't have that spreadsheet and we wanted to redesign the criteria for the level 1 review to see if we needed to do a level 2 review? What would we do?
Talking about the off-ramps?
What off-ramps would we generate?
Well, certainly the going back to Carl over here, poor Carl over here, on the TMDL, if you went back and looked at the basin usage, and that usage wasn't going to make it to another stream because it's all consumed, right? Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
Then that certainly is going to be an impact on whether or not you're going to worry about some downstream use that exists
right.
or doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay, so there would be obviously one kind of thing you would use. I'm not so sure the off-ramps that are there right now, with some tweaking, And with some maybe better understanding as to how they're, when they can be used, aren't all that wrong. I mean, I don't think that the off-ramps are all that wrong. I mean, and Jordan Valley's was because they couldn't show it.
Let me throw out a question. Is everybody comfortable that the background concentration against which the next level one anti-degradation review for 12 Mile Creek will be based upon 535 instead of the original 270, whatever?
Well, that's the question of whether or not you're going to allow the creep, or whether you're going to say, we've got 270, we're going to set a maximum increase for time and all eternity.
Over the 270?
Over the 270. That's your question. If you want to change the policy, you're going to give a maximum allow that you're allowing the overall system to creep. Otherwise,
to creep two until a level two review is required.
Yeah.
Right. That would be the kind of thing. That's the concept that several of the communities have, which is where they set this cap on how much they're allowing the creep to occur.
But
at some point in time, you drew a baseline. I don't know, is that baseline after Mayfield or before Mayfield?
But I wonder if under our law we can actually set the cap.
I don't know. It's got to be more stringent than the federal standard, right?
I mean, there's no language in the statute that requires a cap. So if you set a cap, is that more stringent? I'm just asking the question.
Well, I don't think there's any language in the law that says 20% is usable.
No, the kill.
But that's no. We're talking about a possible determination to set a cap. And I'm just asking whether that violates 19.5.105.
But we're saying the cap to trigger a Tier 2 review,
right.
Not the cap to trigger a non-discharge. So it's not a more stringent standard. It's just simply where the off-ramp is either available or not available. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think the issue becomes more focused if it's a precluding a discharge as opposed
right.
to...
Right. So you still have a Tier 2 review, which is going to go into, as I perceive it, to be the important social and economic issues, right?
Yeah, the necessity.
So this is a Tier 1 off-ramp question as to whether the 20% should have some degree of cap over the base before it no longer is an off-ramp.
This is the de minimis question.
Right.
Is the proposed increase or change de minimis or not?
And to de minimis over time.
Over time. Yeah, striking a base somewhere and saying, we're not going to let, even though this particular increase may be de minimis, the entirety of the increases are no longer de minimis, and we want a Tier 2 review.
From this point forward, because we've reached the plateau.
No. Well, somebody drew a line in the sand. It's all we're saying.
I looked at a couple different states that did this, and some of them did, one of them, I can't remember which one, what did the 1975, the November date when water quality standards kicked
November
in.
November 27.
I don't know how they even have data for that, but one of them did that. One of them did, must have done when their rules went into effect, because it was like a 1980 date. There was a variety of ways that people said, we're starting from this.
Here's what Colorado does. Adopted this provision in 2000, and so it has a year 2000 baseline. He said, we're going to set water quality as of right now as our baseline, and then for parameters where there's a similar capacity, and if it's not a bioaccumulative flu, we will allow de minimis findings until 15% of the similar capacity has been consumed. And once 15% of the capacity as defined by our baseline is gone, then subsequent to that, every increase has to be reviewed. So it doesn't mean that discharges are prohibited. It just means that past that 15% threshold, everything gets the alternative analysis and the questions about whether it's important economic activity and the questions about whether existing uses will be protected.
And since you brought that up and we're digging into this more deeply, the other thing I've noticed is a lot of other states do separate bioaccumulative issues from more conventional normal parameters. And that's something that I think we need to talk about is, 20% of one pollutant is not the same as 20% of another pollutant, et cetera.
Bioaccumulatives and nutrients, mm-hmm. are different, Because for those parameters, sometimes you're more worried about the total load than you are about the
total. Just flag that.
Let me throw this out for discussion. I'm thinking about how we could implement. What if we just brainstorming? What if we said we know that the standard for TDS is 1,200 for agriculture? Use that as an example. And what Dave said then is we take 15% of 1,200.
No.
Your baseline is 270. Right. So you take 15% of 270 and add it to 270, and as long as you stay below that, you're de minimis.
And you don't have to have a level 2.
You don't have to do the level 2. However, it's just a matter of, is that 15%, is it 25%? What percentage are you choosing as a qualifier, and then the striking of the line, what year are you qualifying that as to when you establish that baseline?
Let me throw another way to look at it.
So something that is less polluted now will have less chance to be included. Something that's more polluted now, oh well.
Let me throw this out as a little. Let me throw this out as a little different idea, and just totally open. What if we took a look at a percentage of the standard as the baseline? And so, if we said that a particular water was over, if the TDS standard was 1,000 instead of 1,200, then we wanted to use 15%. Then we'd say if the water quality is greater than 15 or 150, we have to do a level 2 review. Or you could do it the other way. If it's greater than 50% of the 1,200, if it's over 600 and somebody's going to make it go higher, got to have the review.
Well, and then what you're saying is that the guy who's got it's very high quality, you can have a lot more pollution than the one that is only marginal quality, which you're now limiting. You're saying, well, we're not going to let you do anything more because you're at that number.
Without a review.
Without the review. Mm-hmm. But you may not want to have that kind of increase off of that real high-quality water. I mean, obviously, everything's forest service anyway, so you're not going to have a discharge, right? So, in the real high-quality But assuming there's something that's out of the forest service that's really high-quality, would you not want to protect it to a greater standard?
Which is what Antideg is kind of about, is making sure that everybody, I mean, this would be far-fetched in Utah, but over time, people aren't moving almost to the more pristine discharge points because there's more room for... So you just are continually degrading, which is kind of the scenario of the extreme.
I was going to say Montana has that sort of an approach, depending upon the existing quality of the water. If the existing concentrations are low and there's a lot of disposal capacity, they have one set of de minimis. And then at a certain point, I think it's 40% of the standard, they use a different de minimis test. So, I mean, you could look at things like that, having the two different categories of de minimis depending upon the condition of the water level.
And that actually has some merit because you're not looking at the striking the line, but you're looking at where it is right now compared to the total. So if you said your TDS was less than 400, we're going to have a higher, a lesser quality, less, a higher, a worrying, a more worrisome percentage than if it's 700.
Oh, was that a question?
Yeah, I'm sort of curious.
Yeah, if it's
a higher value already, you're going to allow it more assimilative capacity or less?
I'm trying to remember exactly what Montana does. Right now, I'm just remembering that they have sort of a two-tiered approach. But yeah, I think that the logic might be as your water quality degrades and gets closer and closer to your criteria, and you want to be more conservative and require anti-dig reviews for everything. More protective.
So Montana's position is as you get closer to the standard,
your threshold of de minimis gets to be a...
Right, which is a reciprocal in a way.
You get more and more defensive.
I think bureaucratically it would be easier to... Well, not necessarily, because we gather all the information on the background. So we could base it off the background concentration or the standard. Just depending on...
It might be a suggestion to see if everybody wants to try their own stab or what they think is the right way to do by looking at other states and come back for the next meeting.
Because basically we're talking about preventing creep.
The problem with the baseline is, having enough data to know what the baseline is.
Well, that's why I say the standard would be easy, because we know what that is.
Yeah.
And so we could say that we wouldn't allow, yeah. Well, it's 4:30, guys.
I can say Illinois, their water quality board decided de minimis. This whole discussion was too complicated, and they just didn't do it. So that's, if you just want to go home a little early, we could just get rid of that off-ramp.
Well, one thing I'm looking at this, and it seems like some of this is a little bit in the wrong order anyway, mm-hmm. because, for instance, you know, this facility was a new facility, and everything in your list probably was addressed in figuring out what to do in the first place, or
it
probably
was.
Should have been at that point. And so, you know, you're almost doing some of that review, and maybe there's a way to put it in on new facilities versus existing facilities that you're looking to creep. Because, I mean, I look down this list, and it's like, did they want to design a plant that was more expensive than the other alternatives to begin with? I mean, was that the goal? Maybe Sunrise wanted to make some more money. I don't know. But, you know, they wanted to do less effective. I mean, I just kind of go down this list, and it kind of seems like from a new facility or a new discharge permit, you're almost triggered into this review just as part of the planning stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not sure that, I guess I wonder if on that kind of swing it together anyway instead.
Well, it would. On any new facility, they're going to require level two for the exact reason that we show from the spreadsheet.
Yeah.
There's no way to get off.
But I think your point is that the facility planning process, you're addressing a lot of the same questions.
Yeah.
So that all that work that went into the facility planning process, I think, can be used to answer the anti-dig question.
And I think on existing facilities, you end up doing that same kind of work if you're looking at expansion due to population. I mean, a lot of the same kind of stuff are being tied in.
Right.
I mean, this gets caught in on your annual 5-year renewal on your permits, right? Are we seeing something big? But usually you're going to have some kind of facility upgrade that's somewhere in there being driven by things. Population growth is probably the main one. Anyway, so it seems like some of that's a little, you get it a little bit on both sides, but maybe you could balance it out to kind of cover it in both places better.
Well, it's 4:30, guys. I suggest we quit. Let me suggest this, and then I want to turn some time over to Ying-Ying so she can do some wrap-up for us. How about if you all just kind of put your thinking caps on? I think everybody here, I think it's a fair statement, we want to not allow creep. Is that a fair statement? Is everybody trying to say we don't want to allow creep?
As a tier one issue.
Is everybody okay with saying this group says if we just don't want to allow creep past a certain point, and when we reach some kind of a threshold yet to be defined, we're going to require a level two review? Is that what we're coming? I hear that.
It's how you define the
percentage. But now how do we define that?
So we need to make that so we all actually believe what you just said.
do we believe that?
It's a concept.
Well, it depends on how the body comes out of the
concept.
Let's do this then. With that as a preliminary thought, would you all put your thinking caps on and put down the best way you can based on what we've been talking about on how we would do that? It could be based on the Montana with a water quality standard when we reach 50% of the standard in the receiving stream from that point on level two, or 50% more than what the background is or whatever, then from that point on. But bear in mind, there's two big things. The amount of work of course everybody will say, well, that's your job. Division of Water Quality is going to get caught in this for resources, and it's going to cost the dischargers money to answer all those questions. And then that will open up all the legal issues about the dischargers didn't answer the level two questions adequately, and people are going to get sued, and on it goes. So just give us your best shot on how you think we should address this.
You want us to address the level two issue? I think you're closer to what we want than what Oregon is.
Well, I think what we're saying is let's put together ideas about how to manage creep.
How do we manage creep?
And you have the information that we have sent out previously, we being the division, with my email address on it and Ying-Ying's email address. Send it to either one of us on what you think. And in the meantime, we'll get together and start building a case, if you will, on what we think you're all saying and what we feel to. We'll see how this comes down. Is that okay for an assignment for this time? Okay, meeting schedule.
Bill, can I interrupt for 1 second to follow up on something? Jingying had asked me to not do a presentation today, or we decided not to do a presentation because there's so much on the agenda. But what I told her I would do, if the group was interested, is do a paper kind of outlining some of our concerns so that everybody could read through it rather than trying to talk about all the issues. And then I'd be happy to do a presentation at the next meeting.
Okay, would this be a paper of your concerns on all issues?
On anti-DAG, broadly.
Just the anti-DAG. Yeah, we'd accept that. And would you email it to all the members?
That was what I was going to offer. People thought it would be useful to have something to read ahead of time so we don't have to talk for hours. I mean, we might still. We'll see what I read. But if that would be helpful, I could put together a written piece and then do a very short kind of discussion. Not to overshadow the pollution creep, because it seems like we might actually have some traction on that one. I don't want to throw it too broad.
Let me reiterate that the purpose we're doing all this is to make our rules better for everybody. And this is, you know, we're all in this thing together. We all live here together. Let's make them really good for us. And I'll be looking again at the next triennial review in probably 20 years. So. No, I'm not going to do that.
I believe you'll be here, though.
Yeah, it's too long already. Okay, so that's our plan. Yingying?
Okay, well, let me just try to capture the anti-DAG, because I'm going to try to put together a meeting summary. And so if I try to rephrase what Leland said, let's focus on how to manage the creep, the pollution creep, you know, mm-hmm. part of anti-DAG. But my question for you is, I probably am more ambitious than that. I just thought we went through this rule. We still need to get your feedback on the existing language. So would it be too much to ask for each of you to look at two parts of the rule? One is the off-ramps listed under level one. Take a look at that and, you know, let's talk about these things. Some has to go, some has to be revised, or some has to be added, you know, to prevent the pollution creep. And would it be okay, everybody look at the level one off-ramps? And level two, look at the level two review requirements. I think a lot of industry, if they know they're going to do level to, you know, to compile a report to fulfill the level two review requirements, and whether what we're asking here is adequate or reasonable. Just those two things. So next time when we meet, we're better prepared.
Do you want something in writing or just come prepared with thoughts?
I think just prepared to talk about it, you know, because I think this is a lot of information to digest, but I want to, you know, have more constructive, you know, result next time. Just focus on two things, the off-ramps on level one, including how to prevent the creep. And then level two, look at the requirements for level two review, whether, you know, that's adequate or anything else.
The union will create a summary of this meeting.
I'll try.
And send it out to us all. And so we can use that also as kind of a reference text as we refresh our memories and then explain what we think we could do on this issue like we're talking about. And I would really like to see some emails back from each one of you on how you think we can do this. Because eventually it's all going to meld together, and eventually, I would hope, we're all going to say, you know what? It's okay that way. I think we're okay to do it this way. And now we've got consensus. That's how consensus is built.
Okay, I have another thing on the radar screen is the group will identify the hot topics among the previously proposed changes. Look at that. I see which ones you think is okay. You know, I'm okay with the way it's proposed. And which ones, hey, we need to talk about it. So bring that back to the meeting next time.
The next ones that are on that list in the order of importance from the division, I believe, is TDS Next, and then the E. coli, and then it just goes from there.
Does the E. coli include the recreational uses?
Yes, and the full face immersion and all of that discussion. And that should be very, that'll be a fun one.
It'll be great.
It'll be great. And we understand that the Rivers Council will be offering a free float trip down the Snake River after this is all successful.
We're the Yukon Rivers Council. We're going to go down one of ours. So if we reach consensus,
we'll take you out
day,
on a free
I'll take
ride.
You down the river.
We'll take you out on a free ride to Farmington Bay to get full face of murder.
Okay, with the hot topics out of the previous proposed changes, would it be okay for ask the work group to email me back with the things you wanted to? Then I can compile that list before our next meeting.
Yeah, that'd be helpful.
Can you give us a deadline or else
I will mention that in the email. Okay. And I have assignment is I'm going to research the Great Salt Lake Steering Committee. Their ground rules to find out how we can, reach the consensus.
I think it was two-thirds vote with the minority report.
Right. Okay, and then let's look at the agenda. What do we have? Okay, Kevin Murray had asked me to explore the possibility to establish meeting dates in advance with this group, instead of giving a 2-week, 3-week notice. And I wonder whether everybody's okay with that. Mm-hmm.
It's a good idea.
Yeah, and how would you like to do it? Once a month, or?
Could I make a suggestion?
Sure.
Let's start from this premise. What week we in now, third week?
Second.
Okay, let's say this, just for an idea, let me throw this out. Everybody will meet the third week, and today's a Wednesday. Let's say the third week on a Wednesday. That'll be our routine set up. And everybody calls to confirm that that's okay with them. And if not, and there's a whole bunch of problems with the third week and Wednesday in September, then we'll get back and start emailing together. That could be our target for each time. That's our start point.
So you're talking about the third Wednesday of every month?
Third Wednesday of every month. The third Wednesday of every month.
Oh.
And if that gets to be a problem with too many people, then we'll come back.
How about this? In my email to you guys, I'll specify the date and time, and would you email me back if specific days would not work? And if I get a lot of feedback on this day that would not work, then we'll try to find a different date.
We're going
to
specify around the third Wednesday.
Yes.
Now, I understand also that at our next meeting, Ottawa Engineering has offered to supply the platters. Is that right?
Sure, Bill.
And I'll be
for you
in the wildest dreams, huh? Yeah, thanks everybody.
I'll bring some big boneless browns.
There you go. Thanks to everybody for what we're doing. I really feel good about our process, and I've been doing this kind of work, now for 15 years, and it's exciting to
see. You say 50?
And it's making things different.
Did you say 50?
I heard 50.
You know what Brigham called me? The water czar back in 1850. Thanks, everybody.
You're welcome to stay for dinner. We got enough food.
That's great. Yeah. What's happening?
Take some cookies home. Take it all.